Padharshiva Sadi Gaura Bhakti Vrindavanam. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shri Mukunda Radha Kundigiri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachani Vasesa Sindhavati Paskatari Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamala. Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padujana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Drubhischa Kipasin Gurubhita Ptichanam Pavanevyo Vajpalevyo. So we're going to be spending 2 days, 4 hours, which is not a very long time, on this book, Manashiksha, Shri Manashiksha, which literally means Splendid Instructions to the Mind. It was written by Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, 12 verses, and something like Rupa Goswami's Upadesha Amrita, it takes us a long way in just 12 verses. Shri Manashiksha was extensively commented on by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in 2 commentaries, a prose commentary and a song commentary. So for quite some time, it was difficult to find a really good translation of this book. And first Sachinandan Maharaj and then Srimati Devi Dasi of Vrindavan asked me to do something with this book many, many years ago. Get a good translation out there, get the commentaries out there. And finally we were able to do that. And our Sanskrit translator, Hari Parshad Prabhu, was born in a Sarasvat Brahmin family, educated in the traditional Gurukul system as a Sanskrit translator, as a disciple of Radha Govinda Prabhu. Our Bengali translators, Pran Govinda Prabhu of Alachua, who's Bengali, many of you may know him, and Krishna Abhishek Prabhu, who's also born in Bengal. He's a descendant in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and recently completed his PhD dissertation in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these are our translators of the text and the commentary, and also we were very fortunate to get commentary in our book from Shivaram Maharaj, Sachinandan Maharaj, Bhakti Vigyan Swami, and Jai Dwaita Swami on these verses. And then we were even, again, so much fortune that we were able to get Gananjana Das of Italy to do 12 original oil paintings to illustrate each of the 12 verses. And about 7 different artists, we did 120 black and white illustrations of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. So all of the 12 color illustrations and most of the 120 are in this presentation. All of them are, of course, in the book. And this is our just an advanced printing. We just got 10 copies here in LA, and we've already sold 6. So I was thinking they were going to last us for 3 days, and we have them over there. Because the company messed up on the first proof, they agreed to send these copies without shipping charges. So therefore, they will be on sale on Amazon probably in about a week or so for $25 for the set. He will take any donations of 20 or above. So they're all there. Here. Now, what's really nice about Shri Manashiksha is that one of the reasons that this book is so important to translate and to be learned by the devotees is it's not close enough.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the reasons that it's so important for this book to be read by the devotees, I personally think one of the most important reasons is that it's very hard to find, I think, good advice for the sadhaka. You know, we have all these descriptions of how to get from a materialist to a devotee, right? Detailed descriptions, say in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, how you start as a materialist and make that step to a devotee. But it often seems like you become a devotee and then kind of, poof, there you are in Vrindavan, you know. Srila Prabhupada will say things like, immediately, chant Hare Krishna, immediately, Krishna's dancing on your tongue. Most of us don't find that it's that immediate. We find that it's step by step. So we have, of course, the Madhuri Kadambani Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, we have Upadesh Amrita Rupa Goswami, we have in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is giving Shraddha to Prema. But what's kind of going on inside? I mean, we do have something in Madhuri Kadambani like that, but Manushiksha also really gets into what's the internal transformation that takes you from, okay, I want to be a devotee, I want to go to Vrindavan, I want to love Krishna, and actually being there. What happens internally? What do you have to do? What are the internal steps? And Raghunath Das Goswami has done this primarily with metaphor. He's done it primarily symbolically, which is just, I think, just amazing. The different metaphors he's done, and then Bhaktivinoda takes and expands it. Now, one thing you'll find, especially those of you who actually, because this is just a little touching on it in 4 hours, but those of you who actually get the book and go through, as you can see, we have substantial commentary here. What I found is that I couldn't read too much at a time because it was so real. You understand? It really got into the heart and opened it up and said, here it is. And I had to take a little break and go, okay, I gotta digest that. Then I can take another step. And then I can. It was so personal and it was so real and it was so helpful. It was like, yes, this is really how we progress to Krishna. Now, another big importance of Manushiksha, as far as our Sampradaya, is there was a huge controversy which has gone on to the present day. Did Bhakti Sananta Sarasvati really teach Raghunuga Bhakti? Did he really teach us how to approach Krishna in Vrindavan in spontaneous love? Or was he just teaching, okay, just follow the rules and regulations based on the scripture? So what was he actually doing? And there was a big protest during Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's time as to whether or not he was teaching the bona fide path of Raga Bhakti as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And many things have been said on both sides, but I would like to present that I think Manushiksha is the ultimate answer. And I'm not going to go into that too much tonight. We do have a chapter in the book on the subject, but just a little bit of an idea. Swarup Damodar Maharaj had taught both the inner and the outer path of Raghunuga Sadhana, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in verse 3. Most people mistakenly think that Raghunuga Bhakti is just the external path. But here, Raghunatha Swami is teaching the internal path. And this book clearly establishes that what Srila Bhakti Sananda Sarasvati taught, and also, of course, Srila Prabhupada, certainly a foremost disciple, without question of Bhakti Sananda Sarasvati, that he also has continued that tradition. And our practice of Raghunuga Sadhana is what Raghunath Das Goswami is teaching in this Manushiksha. And you may say, well, I'm not ready for Raghunuga Sadhana, I don't even know if I'm ready for Vaidhi Bhakti. I don't even know if I'm ready to walk in the door, or I don't even know what any of that means. That's okay. What's nice about Manushiksha is it's not one of those high lila books that only the very elevated people can touch. And it's something that anybody, even if it's your first time walking in the door of a Hare Krishna temple, can find things in there to relate to and to use in your life. Now, I do have a different presentation that I put together for the general public. So this particular presentation is going to assume that you know who Srila Prabhupada is, you know who Rupa Goswami is, and so forth. But there's a lot in here that can apply to anyone. Okay, are we ready?
Yes.
All right. So the Manushiksha we can divide up basically into three parts. The first part is you're kind of starting on your spiritual journey, what your orientation is, where you're going, how you set your compass, who are you, what do you want to achieve, what do you don't want to achieve. The second part deals with the monsters and the pitfalls and the difficulties that will happen on the way and what to do about them. So for each of them, Raghunath Das Goswami is going to say, here's the problem, here's the solution. Here's the problem, here's the solution. But it's deep metaphorical stuff. Then, and the last verse is, you're there. You're there. You've passed through all of the difficulties. You've passed through all the obstacles. And there you are. And how do you get the final training? How do you get the final entrance? What does it mean to reach perfection? So these verses are meant to be sung. In fact, the last benedictory verse says that if they're sung with a sweet voice, so sorry, I'm sitting up here, I don't think I qualify, but if they're sung with a sweet voice, then one will get the ultimate jewel of love of God. So I'd like us to try singing these together. They're sung to the same meter as the Jagannath Astakam, except you can't sing the last line differently, it doesn't work out very well. So you've got to sing the last line the same way you sing the first three. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes? So I don't want to be responsible. Let's try to just do it together. Gaurav kaste gostala isu sujane gusra gane swamantra shina mitra janava yuva dhamva sharane saradamam itva guru rati napurma matitara. That's the same. Aye sumbharma chascha tubiya viya chedri. Oh dear brother, oh mine, having given up all pride, please develop unprecedented and excessive attachment to Sri Guru, to Sri Vrindavan, the abode of cows, to the devotee residents of Vrindavan, to all the devotees on this planet, to the confidential mantra given by Sri Guru, to the holy names of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and to the process of surrendering to the fresh, youthful couple of Raja. Holding your feet, I beseech you with sweet words. So Raghunath Das Goswami, in instructing his mind, is instructing all of our mind. And he's been very kind to his mind. Right? Sometimes Bhagavad Sanatana would say, beat your mind with shoes and sticks. But here Raghunath Das Goswami is going very carefully. Oh my dear, I beseech you, falling at your feet very sweetly. So to have loving attachment to our Diksha and Shiksha gurus, to all of our teachers, any of our gurus, anyone who guides us on the path. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, don't see your guru just as a saint. See your guru as your friend. See your guru as your well-wisher, as Srila Prabhupada would always sign his letters, your ever well-wisher. In other words, it should be personal, not just official. Oh, here's my guru, there's the picture, Jai Guru, Jai Guru. And nor should it be, like some groupie, you know? Like, all the young girls who fainted at the Beatles concerts or whoever's concerts they faint at today. I'm sure they have somebody they're fainting at today. And it's not really a personal relationship. They don't care about the person. The person doesn't care about them. It's really all about themselves. We see that a lot. As Prabhupada would say, don't keep the guru as a fashion, as a pet. So what does that mean? But you see, it's very common. Oh, yes, yes, here's my guru. And you have your guru just to give you prestige. Right? Just something to add to your prestige. And recently, when I was in the doctor office, you know, he had all of his diplomas, all of his certificates, everything. There were about 15 of them up on the wall. And he said, oh yeah, they require we put everything on the wall to give the patients confidence. So you don't want your guru to be like that, one of your certificates. Oh yeah, this is my, see, I graduated from this guru academy. But this is my good friend, my well-wisher. This is someone who really cares for them. I mean, I know I was very blessed with my father, and Srila Prabhupada said, when he met my father, said, good father, good daughter. And I was very blessed to have a very tight relationship with my father, such that I would never do anything to displease him, and I always wanted to try to please him. I mean, long before there were, you know, prohibitions against smoking in public, etc., they used to have cigarette advertisements on TV when I was little kid. And my father would say, don't ever smoke. He'd say, if you ever smoke, I'll take you to the lung cancer ward or the hospital, and if that doesn't stop you, I'll disown you. But it was loving, and so I never smoked. 90% of the kids in my high school smoked. I didn't. Why? Not because I was afraid of cancer. You know, you're not really afraid of cancer when you're like 14 years old. But because I love my father. So that's the kind of relationship we should have with the guru. That we should be feeling, I don't want to do anything that will hurt my guru. I don't want to displease my guru. I want to make my guru happy. And that's our training, really, for our loving relationship with Krishna. And Raghunath Das Goswami says to have exclusive and one-pointed attachment to Radha Krishna's feet as dear as life. Now this is going to be very important when we get to the next verse. One-pointed, a.k.a. Karunandana, right? To have one-pointed attachment. So generally in this world, our attachment is splayed all over the place, right? I have this dedication to my job, and this dedication to my family, and this dedication to my hobby, and this dedication. And if somebody has religion, it's just a piece of the pie, yes? You know, you got a pie, you cut up into several pieces, or it's one of the preparations of the meal. You know, you have your bread, and you have your rice, and you have your soup, and you have your vegetables, and you know, my religion is maybe the chutney, right? Or maybe it's the bread, if I'm really religious. You know, maybe it's the staple food, but I've got so many things going on, and it's not one-pointed. It's not one-pointed. And in fact, people who are one-pointed in their religion tend to be seen as? Wow. Fanatics. In our modern society, it's really, you know, it's derogatory. It's an insult. Oh, you're really religious, huh? Right? I mean, when those of us who weren't born in the movement, when those of us who were born in other situations, when we came, a lot of the main objection of our families was that we were too into it. I mean, I remember my mother saying, you know, it's fine to be religious once a week or so. Or even once a day for a few minutes, but all the time. And you find this even in the Indian families, even in the Indian Vaishnava families, they'll say that. It's too much. You know, you can be religious on Sunday. But here, Raghunath Das Goswami is one-pointed. One-pointed. And very importantly, specifically for Manushiksha, is one-pointed to Radha Krishna. One-pointed to Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. As we said, this book is about the inner path of spontaneous love. So this is my only interest. And of course it's fascinating, Srila Prabhupada in his purport to 1865 of the Bhagavad Gita says that one should fully concentrate one's mind on the form of Krishna playing his flute, and one should not even divert one's attention to other forms of the Lord. And you could say, well, we have Gaudiya in the altar. There's Jagannath and Balaram and Nisingadev's over there. I guess we should take him off the wall. Don't divert your attention, Prabhupada says, to any other forms of the Lord. So what does that mean? We will get to that in the forthcoming verses. But right now, it's one-pointed. Without being not only just one-pointed in terms of spiritual life, in terms of enlightenment, in terms even of Vishnu Tattva, but one point in true Vrindavan. And loving attachment to all the places in Vrindavan. Why attached to those places? Well, it's very natural. If you're attached to a person, you're going to be attached to the places that are in relationship to that person. Isn't it? I mean, there's a big tourist trade in, I don't know what it's called, Elvis Presley's place, wherever it is.
Graceland.
You know, what's really funny is there's a big tourist trade to Sherlock Holmes' place, and he's just a fictional character. It's hysterical, you know? People go to whatever it is, Baker Street, right? In London. Because that's where the fictional character Sherlock Holmes was supposed to live. They're attached to the place. And it's natural. We all have some attachment to our homeland, isn't it? People die for they die for the piece of earth that's on their side of the border. I mean, it's sort of ludicrous if you think about it, isn't it? Somehow the dirt that's on my side of the border is worth literally giving up my right arm for. And the dirt on your side of the border isn't. But why do we have this attachment to a place? It's natural. So this attachment to a place, it's always in relation to a person. I'm attached to this place because this is my parents' place, my grandparents' place, my ancestral place. So to be attached to God's place. And you can say, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that we should all, you know, get on a plane and go to India? But one can also make God's place in one's own place. Like here in Los Angeles, here is also the spiritual world. It's one of the seven purposes of ISKCON, to create holy places in the world. And we can create holy places in our own home. It doesn't really take much. Some little place, put a picture of Krishna in it, and you worship Krishna. You become attached to that place where Krishna is, to the places where Krishna had performed his pastimes. When Uddhava came to Vrindavan with Krishna's message, he met with Nanda and Yasoda. And the acharyas are commenting that Uddhava said, you know, why don't you get out of the house? You might tell that to a friend of yours who was mourning, right? If you have some friend and a dear friend of theirs died or went to a distant place and they're just sitting at home crying, you might go and say, why don't you get out of the house? And Nanda Maharaj said, it doesn't do any good. He says, when I go out of my home, everywhere I go, I see, oh, Krishna did this over here. And Krishna did this over here, and Krishna said this over here, and Krishna ate this over here, and then I can't function. Right? So to have that kind of attachment to the holy place. Now, I find this very interesting. So Raghunathas Goswami says that we should be attached to three kinds of devotees. And what I find fascinating, absolutely fascinating, is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines and explains these three kinds of devotees. So the first kind of devotees that Raghunath Das Goswami says we should be attached to are those whose body and mind live in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan. Now this can mean those whose just minds live in Vrindavan. For the purpose of pleasing the Lord, those who live in Vrindavan, at least mentally, for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. All right, so, my dear friends, this eliminates people who live in Vrindavan in body but not in mind and not for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. So if you were ever disturbed by this dichotomy of what is the Vrajvasi, hopefully that finishes that problem. If you ever went to Vrindavan and you thought, these are Vrajvasis. If they're there only in body and not in mind, purpose is not for pleasing the Lord, then they're not in this category. Someone who's only living in Vrindavan in mind with the purpose of pleasing the Lord is in this category. So most important is in mind and for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says these are the top devotees. These are the Uttam Bhaktas. And we'll find different explanations of Uttam Bhaktas other places. In the 11th canto, there's one. And in the Upadeshamrita, there's one. In Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, there's another. Really, Uttam just means above ignorance, means the highest. And Madhu just literally means middle. And Kanista means unsteady, just means a beginner. So if we say, what's a beginner, what's an unsteady, what's a top, you know, there's going to be different ways of defining that, right? It's just like even if you say, well, what's a child? Are you talking about a child physically? Are you talking about a child emotionally? I mean, I've met some 40-year-old people that are pretty childish. Right? So what do we mean? There's all different ways of looking at it. So if you're going to look at what's a beginner, intermediate, and advanced devotee, there's different lenses you could look at. And through this lens, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Raghunath Das Goswami, by those who live mentally in Vrindavan, with the purpose of pleasing the Lord, they are the Uttam Bhaktas. Why are they Uttam Bhaktas? Because this is all about being one-pointed to Krishna and Vrindavan. So in this context, those who are absorbed in Krishna and Vrindavan to please the Lord are the Uttam Bhaktas. Now, who are the Majjhimas? The Majjhimas are the devotees, the intermediate devotees, of any genuine tradition, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, who may or may not live in Vrindavan. What does that mean? They may not live in Vrindavan even in their mind. It means they may not even be aspiring for Vrindavan. They may be aspiring in general for God. They may be aspiring for Vaikuntha. They're not living in Vrindavan. They may live in Vrindavan in their mind and just not be that advanced, or they may not be living in Vrindavan in their mind. Even the other Vaishnava Sampradayas do not all aspire for Vrindavan. The than the Embarka Sampradaya does, but say the Sri Sampradaya does not. They're aspiring for Vaikuntha. And one should have genuine attachment and love for such devotees. So here we eliminate sectarianism. And as you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very strong on eliminating sectarianism. And frankly, for myself, one of the reasons that I joined ISKCON was Srila Prabhupada's very non-sectarian stance. He didn't condemn other religious traditions. And in fact, there were at least several times when Srila Prabhupada was initiating devotees where he defined, right, don't blaspheme the devotees who dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. He said, that means don't blaspheme Jesus and Muhammad. Interesting. Whereas recently in America, there was a teacher in a Christian school who was fired for saying that the God of Islam is the same as the God of Christianity. She was fired from her job. They said, you cannot say that in a Christian school. They said, no, Muslims are not worshiping the same God. Whereas here, Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, this is the beginning. This is the beginning. This is what you're starting. Affection for Guru as a friend. One-pointed attachment for Krishna and Vrindavan. Attachment for holy places. Attachment to the Uttam Bhaktas and attachment to the Majjhim Bhaktas. Without this attachment, not just tolerance of them. Oh yeah, we tolerate them. Yeah, they're in a different tradition, but we tolerate them. Yeah. No, loving attachment for them. Love, affection, caring. And then even attachment for the neophytes. And how does Raghunath Das Goswami define the neophytes? He describes them, oh boy, there's a lot of people in this time aren't going to like this. I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for this one. He describes the neophytes as people who are brahmanas who teach varnashram. Maybe this is the last class I'll ever give, I don't know. I'm sorry, that's Raghunath Das Goswami. The brahmanas who teach varnashram. They're priests, they're religious leaders, they're teachers. And what is varnashram? Material piety. How to be a good person in the world. Now, we in the Hare Krishna movement care about material piety. We want people to be materially pious. We don't want them to be impious. But if that's all you do, then you're neophyte devotee. Because why? You're only thinking about this world. You're only thinking about the standards of this world. But loving attachment for them also. Not saying, oh, they're just teaching material piety. Oh, they're just teaching varnashram. We have something higher. We are going to Krishna and Vrindavan. Who cares about this? No, love and attachment for them. How wonderful it is that here are religious leaders teaching even material piety. And Raghunath Das Goswami is saying unprecedented love and attachment. He's using the word Rati. Rati is the wife of Cupid. Deep love. To have attachment to our Diksha mantras. Those of us who receive Diksha, we receive the Gayatri mantras. To actually love your mantras. Attachment. Again, unprecedented Rati. Not just, oh, this is someone. Somebody have to say, okay, it's time. Did my duty, all right. Check it off my checklist. But to go deep into the mantras, and we're fortunate we have a number of books in our movement. Satchananda Maharaj has written a book on the Gayatri Mantra. One of the Navavraja Mahima books by Shivaram Maharaj is on the Gayatri Mantra. That one can really meditate. Of course, we have some wonderful purports by Srila Prabhupada on the Gayatri Mantra, especially on the Kama Gayatri Gopal Mantra and the Brihad Bhagavatamrita to really gain an appreciation for the Gayatri Mantras. And with these Gayatri Mantras, one again can enter into the spiritual world. And deep attachment to the holy name. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in commenting here, says, especially to the primary names of God. Again, attachment, not as a ritual, not as this is just what my religion does, not just as musical entertainment, not as a filler for time. I often see this at our programs. The speaker's late, and we have extra time. Okay, let's have a kirtan. And everybody, oh, nothing's going on yet. It's just the kirtan. Right? It's just the kirtan. I'll hang out and talk. Should I tell an embarrassing story? So I was at New Vrajdam in Hungary for Janmashtami. And I noticed that there was no entertainment for the whole Janmashtami festival on the schedule. So I went to Shivaram Maharaj and I said, Maharaj, I have a multimedia presentation on Krishna's appearance. Could I give it as part of the schedule? He said, yes, you have to start precisely exactly at 10 o'clock and you have to finish precisely exactly at 11 o'clock. He said, you cannot go even 1 minute over 11 o'clock. So I thought, well, there must be something very important happening at 11 o'clock that I have to end precisely for, right? So pretty much all day there was kirtan in the temple room from greeting the deities, except for a two-hour class, from greeting the deities until 10 o'clock at night. Then I gave my presentation. I ended exactly at 11, and at 11, guess what happened?
More kirtan.
And so I went up to Maharaj the next day, and I said, Maharaj, you told me to end exactly at 11 o'clock. And at 11 o'clock, the kirtan continued, and he looked at me and he said, yes, that's the most important thing. And I was really thinking about how many times it's like that. Oh, kirtan's fine. And I'll talk to my friends. The important thing hasn't started yet. But deep attachment to the holy name. You know, even the mundaners are like that, right? They sing their songs. I mean, I remember the songs. Oh, Gloria. There was a song like that. Or what was some more? Oh, Rhonda. Oh, Paul. You know, they're so attached to the name of their beloved. What do they see as the sweetest sound for anyone is their own name? Isn't it? In a room full of talking people, if you even think you hear your name. Right? And Krishna's so soft. If someone just says, oh, let's go to the Cinerama, he says, oh, did you call? Says, that one's mine. Right. I mean, Ajamil, he just said one time. And he was just talking to his kid. Narayana! Up. Mine. He's mine. Leave him alone. Right? Krishna claimed him. Here's our painting for this verse. So here, this is Nandagram from a description from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And here you see the residents of Vrindavan, the Brahmanas, the abode of the cows. So that's our first verse. This is where we're starting from. We're starting from a platform of unprecedented attachment. Unprecedented attachment. Now, there was one thing in the verse that we didn't mention yet. Does anybody remember what we said in verse 1 that I didn't mention yet? Because it's going to be really important starting in verse 4. He said, Dambang Hitva. He said, give up pride. So it's all this positive stuff. Be attached to Krishna. One point, be attached to Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. Love the devotees who live mentally in Vrindavan. Love the devotees who don't live mentally in Vrindavan. Love the ordinary teachers of religion. Love your diksha mantras. Love the holy name. And don't be prideful. Give up pride. Now we're just starting here. So although we say completely give up pride here, and he does say completely give up pride, you can't have completely given up pride here because we're going to be going deeper. Into pride. Not yet. Because now we're just starting. We don't want to get too discouraged. But once we get on the journey, we're going to be facing pride. It is deeper and more subtle and yet more subtle and almost impossible to detect features. So at this point, one has to at least be willing to give up pride. Although he says, Raghunathas Goswami saying completely, it's a relative completely. You follow? It's completely as to where you are at this point. I remember going to one Vyas Puja ceremony, ages ago. And some people who just joined the movement were reading an offering and they say, and I've completely surrendered. And I was thinking, So, yes, they completely surrendered according to their understanding and capacity at that moment. and how really unsurrendered they were, they would find out. Yes? And if anyone told them that on the first day, they probably wouldn't even have stayed. So something like that with pride. So completely give up pride cannot mean on an absolute level here, because Raghunath Das Goswami is going to take us into these subtleties later. All right, so we all ready now with all the, everyone and everything we're attached to? Yes? Everybody got that? Everything we're attached to? Do we all have some attachment to that? Everybody have some attachment to Krishna? In Vrindavan? Attachment to the holy places? And to the devotees? And to Guru? And to the mantra? Do we all have that? At least a little bit something?
Yeah.
Okay, we ready to go on? You don't have anything? Third type of person to be attached to. Give me a second. That is the brahmanas who teach varnashram. So they're religious people, religious leaders, and they're teaching ordinary pious activities. Okay, can we do this again for verse 2? Remember, this is like the Jagannath Astika, but you can't do the last line differently. Na dharma na dharma shruti gana niruktam kila guru raje raishna rajura parichayam niyatanu tatri sunam nani shvara Sutatve Guru Param Mukunda Prestatve Smara Paramajasham Nanumanam. Indeed, do not perform any pious acts prescribed in the Vedas and supporting literature, or sinful acts forbidden in them. Stand here in Raja, please perform a profuse service to Sri Sri Radhakrishna. O Maya, unceasingly remember the son of Shakti as the son of Nadirmaj and Sri Guru as the dearest servant of the Lord. So let's look first at this na dharmam, shruti gana. What the scriptures say is good and bad, don't do any of it. This is the verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes quite a bit. So to understand this, we understand something of karma, vikarma, and akarma. This is from the Bhagavad Gita 4:17, where Krishna says the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know precisely, properly, what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. So there's karma, vikarma, and akarma. And Raghunath Das Goswami says, don't do karma and vikarma. Only do akarma. So akarma is where you're doing everything for the pleasure of the Lord. Karma is I'm trying to get a certain result, I'm doing it for myself, I'm doing good work. Vikarma, I'm trying to get a certain result, and I'm doing it for myself, and it's bad work. Okay, so it's pretty simple. Karma is I have a good job, it's an honest job. You know, I'm a teller at the bank. Good, honest job. I pick up the garbage, whatever it is. I teach mathematics to sixth grade. Pay my taxes. Go to work on time. Don't steal any pens from the company. Yeah. And why am I doing it? I'm doing it because I want to enjoy money. I want to enjoy, you know, I want to buy a new flat screen TV, and I want to buy a Jaguar car. I want to have a nice house. I want to feed my dog. I want some status. And then vikarma is, you know, I steal your money, I cheat, I lie. I not only steal the company pens, I goof off at work and still draw my paycheck. Why? So I can buy the flat screen TV and I can buy the Jaguar and I can buy the dog food and I can enjoy the money. You follow? So either case, I want to enjoy it, and one way I'm doing it nicely and one way I'm not doing it nicely. To do akarma, I'm going to look like a pious person in the world, but I'm going to do it to please Krishna. So I may look like that. I still have a job at the bank, I may still be picking up the garbage, I may still be teaching sixth grade mathematics, but I'm doing it so Krishna will smile, kind of a secret agent for Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it looks like if you didn't do dharma or adharma, you wouldn't be doing anything. Because everything we do is going to be listed in the Vedas as good or bad. It's not that you just, you know. There are spiritualists who try to do that. There are Gyan Yogis who just, I mean, look, there are Gyan Yogis who try to stop breathing. Yes? Not very many today, but there are Gyan Yogis who try to stop breathing, try to stop eating. No interaction, they just enter into a trance of samadhi. So no, act for Krishna, but act for Krishna. So though we have all respect and love for the spiritual teachers who teach Varnashram, that's not our interest. And we're going to get to this a little later in one of the verses, actually probably tomorrow, about the Swanista Sadhaka and the Parinista Sadhaka, those who follow Varnashram and don't. And then there's another question, and that is, Raghunathas Goswami said one pointed for Krishna. Remember we talked about this and said, well, what are we doing with Gaudiya Thayi and Nrisingadev? So, of course, Raghunathas Goswami was sold out to Mahaprabhu, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, therefore, he says, meditate on the son of Sachi as being the son of Nanda Maharaj. And I don't know why he picked Lord Chaitanya's mother and Krishna's father, but anyway. So what does this mean? It means we see our Krishna in all of the incarnations. I just got such a sweet email from a devotee the other day. He said, here I am in Mayapur, I'm seeing Lord Nrisingadev, but I see him as Krishna. Krishna in the mood of Lord Nrisingadev. He said, in fact, I kind of see him as a little boy playing as Lord Nrisingadev. I thought about, I have a 2-year-old grandson who likes to play that he's Lord Nrisingadev. Little kid, just 2 years old, he'll go. So the devotee who's one-pointed to Krishna, we celebrate Gaur Purnima, we celebrate Ram's appearance day, we celebrate Nrisingadev's appearance day. We love hearing about all the incarnations and all the pastimes of Krishna. But we say, oh, there's Krishna. Of course, the gopis criticized Krishna like that. Oh, we know when you were Lord Ramachandra, you wouldn't accept Shripanika's proposal. Not very nice of you, Krishna. They're saying, there's my Krishna. They're always saying, there's my Krishna. So this is a mood, and especially with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is not avatar, but avatari. That Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are both Akhila Rasamrita Murti. The devotee sees Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like that, and this way he is one-pointed. It's interesting that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, in his purport to Brahma Sanhita, says that some devotees have eternal pastimes with Lord Chaitanya, some have eternal pastimes with Krishna, and some have eternal pastimes with both. So there are certain devotees that don't appear in Gaura Lila, that appear in Krishna Lila, and vice versa, and there are some who appear in both Lila. So that's also a little interesting. Now, I also found it fascinating that in this verse, Raghunathas Goswami again tells us that we should have love for Radha Krishna, but he refers to Krishna as the son of Nanda Maharaj. So the painting that we had done for this verse, because I was really thinking about, well, how could we have a painting that has Radharani and Krishna and Nanda Maharaj? Krishna is the son of Nanda Maharaj and Radha Krishna. So I thought, well, there's a Lila where Radharani is helped serving the food when Krishna is there with Nanda Maharaj. But there was already a painting done like that. You can see it on a temple wall in Hungary. So we didn't want another painting of the same thing. So we chose this pastime. And in the smaller book, actually we have this, this painting is described in both books. In this book we have descriptions of all 12 of the paintings. But this is a story from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. It's also referred to in Prabodhananda Swami's commentary to Gita Govinda. And this is when Radha and Krishna were both very young. And Nanda Maharaj took Krishna, so you know, he must have been able to be away from his mother for a few hours, so maybe he was like 3 years old. Radharani would have been appearing like 2 years old. So Nanda Maharaj took little Krishna out with him to take care of the cows, and they crossed the Yamuna, And they were at Bandiravan, if any of you have been there. It's a big venue tree. And then, as Nanda Maharaj was there with little Krishna and the cows, a huge storm came up. And Nanda Maharaj didn't know what to do. He said, I have to gather the cows together in this storm, but I can't properly gather the cows together when I'm holding my child. But if I put my child down, he'll get lost in the storm. So how am I going to take care of both my child and the cows? So at that time, although Radharani was generally manifest also, was less like 2 or 3 years old, all of a sudden she appears before Nanda Maharaj as a fully grown goddess. And Nanda Maharaj says to her, ah, I know that you are the goddess of fortune, and you belong with my son. She says, I'll take care of him for you and bring him home. So he gives little infant Krishna to this goddess Radharani, and Nanda Maharaj takes the cows home. Radharani is holding Krishna, and then she sees this beautiful palace. And as she goes to enter into the palace, infant Krishna transforms into his eternal youthful form. And at that time, Lord Brahma comes, and he performs a wedding ceremony. And as if he was Radha's father, he gives Radharani in marriage to Krishna, and all the demigods are participating and showering flowers. And after Radha and Krishna have their pastimes, as they're decorating each other, Krishna again turns into an infant. And Radha, as a goddess, carries him to Mother Yasoda and says, I brought back your baby through the great storm and across the river, and here is your son. Now I'm going to go home. So this is the story behind this painting. Now, also in the second verse, as Raghunath Das Goswami has told us how to meditate on Lord Chaitanya, he's also told us how to meditate on a guru. Now, we heard in the first verse that one should meditate on a guru as our friend. I see that Srila Prabhupada's my friend and my well-wisher, not just the acharya and the saint. But also, the guru is Krishna's friend. The guru is very dear to Krishna. And here we have this drawing, how the guru is very dear to Krishna, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur says also, maybe the representative of Srimati Radharani. And the guru, as the dear friend of Krishna, the dear friend of Radharani, is taking us out of the material world. So in this way also we have one pointed attachment, a significant and subtle point. Now Prabhupada says, or I'd like to quote, one who has attachment, unflinching attachment to Guru and Krishna, all the imports of the Vedic literature are revealed. But is it Guru and Krishna? It's one pointed to Krishna. Well, if it's one pointed to Krishna, how can I have attachment to Guru? Because Guru is Krishna's best friend. Does that make sense? If I have one point of attachment to you, I'm also going to take care of your friend. Just like Srila Prabhupada gives the example, when you get married, you don't just marry the person, you marry into the family. Sometimes that's a little awkward, right? I've met many people who say, you know, I love my spouse, but my spouse is family. I wouldn't mind if they went to Namibia, you know? But as soon as you marry someone, then you have a father-in-law, mother-in-law, sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law. So that attachment to Krishna means Krishna's friends, Krishna's associates. So one pointing to Krishna means that Guru is Krishna's friend. Okay, so this solves the problem. How do I be one pointing to Krishna and still have affection for Lord Chaitanya and still have affection for Krishna, for a guru, and it also... Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, okay, but you've got to give up this karma and vikarma. Not that I have attachment to Krishna, I have attachment to Krishna's places, and I have attachment to the devotees, and attachment to my mantra, but I still like to do sneaky, tricky things to enjoy the world. Or I want to think of myself as a good, pious person. You've got to give that up. As long as we do that, then we're going to be taking birth again and again and again. Maybe in connection with Krishna, you know, maybe we'll take birth in Vaishnava families. Maybe we'll take birth on the heavenly planets. We're not going to go where we really want to go. So that's something we have to jettison. Okay, so we are right now with second verse. Don't be attached to being a sneaky, tricky, cheating person in the world. That's an attachment, you know. I'm so bad. Don't be attached to being a good person in the world. I'm so good. See Lord Chaitanya as Krishna. See Guru as Krishna's friend. friend. That way there's still one pointedness, nothing to distract us. Okay, we're going to go on now to verse 3, which is the last of the introductory verses. Okay, you ready again? Yadi charava samraja buddhi saragam pratichana yudhatvandam tachet parijaritam maradabhilase swarupa shirupa sakhanami atasya prajanapi spuntam prinanityam smaranamata. Listen, O mine, if you desire in every birth to reside in the land of Raja with loving attachment and to serve the beautiful couples, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, in close proximity, then clearly remember and offer obeisances to Sri Sarupa, to Sri Rupa and his associates in Vrindavan, and to Sri Rupa's elder brother, Sri Sanatana. Birth after birth. I was just the other day speaking to a godbrother who said, you know, for the first time, I really feel like I could be happy eternally doing what I'm doing even in the material world. Just sharing Krishna consciousness and pleasing Srila Prabhupada. That's love. Desires for liberation are not compatible with desires for love. What does love mean? When you love someone, you're bound to them, isn't it? I like in Madhava Mahotsava of Jiva Goswami, when Radharani is crowned as the queen, she says, I grant liberation to all who are bound. And her friends go, no! Because they're bound to her with love. They don't want to be free. Like when Krishna said to Rukmini, okay, you're free to go now. You married the wrong guy. You're supposed to marry equals. But I'm not good enough for you. I'm penniless. I'm afraid of the earthly kings. Nobody knows my caste. Why don't you go marry somebody more suitable? No! Right? She didn't want her freedom. If you're in love with someone and they come and say, okay, you're free to go now, you're going to like that. No, I want to stay with you wherever you go. Sita said, I want to stay with you. Go to the forest. I'll walk in front of you and crush the thorns under your feet. That's love. So what do you mean for bhakti? Love means whatever, wherever. Here, there. And if you have love, you know, it doesn't matter where you are. The reason we don't like being in these material bodies in the material world is because we don't have love. It's not really because, you know, our digestion doesn't work, or our nose doesn't work, or, you know, we had a terrible father. That's not really what's bothering us. We don't have any money in the bank. What are all the lists of things, right? Our parents weren't nice to us. Our body doesn't work. We don't have any money. Our relationships are terrible. That's not really what's bugging us here. It's not really adidaivik, adibhautik, and adiatmik. It's not really birth, death, old age, and disease. You got to tell people that at first because they're just sort of complacent and, yeah, I'm happy. But what's really making us unhappy, I'm sorry, is that we're selfish. Sorry, I didn't really say that. That's what's really making us unhappy, that we're not full of love. If we're full of love for Krishna, it wouldn't matter. Right? When you love somebody, if you have to, you know, take a lot of trouble to get something from them, does it bother you? If you have to spend all day sacrificing your time and your energy and your money, and you don't even notice because you're just so full of love for that person. So therefore he's saying life after life. If you really want to do that, of course, Krishna doesn't usually ask the devotee to do that. Because when the devotee says, Krishna, I'm full of love for you, I don't even care where, how, what, I just want to love you. He says, oh, well, love you. Come be with me. When you say that to people who love you, you wouldn't keep them outside the door. Now, here, in verse 3, we are getting to a point that some people might call sectarian. But you know we're not sectarian because we're already told to have loving attachment to all the classes of devotees. Raghunathdas Goswami is saying, you know, if you really want this, Swarup Damodar and Rupa and Sanatan. They're the ones who have it. They're the ones who have it. And Bhakti Nautekar says, you know, you might find indications of this in other sampradayas or other trends, but not so likely. You really have to dig for it, isn't it? You know, you might find some Sri Vaishnava who loves Radha Krishna. You might even find a Christian saint or a Muslim saint who has some. I mean, I remember meeting these people who studied the Jewish Kabbalah, and they said, we discovered God as a blue boy who herds cows. But that's not going on in the main. Yes, you know, you just go to your average church or synagogue or mosque or even Hindu temple. They're not going to be teaching that. Whereas Swarup Damodar is teaching this explicitly. Now, as you may have remembered from what I said in the very beginning, in the introduction, Swarup Damodar was enjoined by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach the path of spontaneous loving devotion to Krishna. Remember I talked about the controversy with Bhakti Sananda and the Radhakund Bhaktis? So that is our process, my dear friends. Our process is to gain spontaneous loving attachment to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that was his mission. That's what he came for. If we're not aiming for that, then we're not really part of Mahaprabhu's movement. And Mahaprabhu taught this specifically to Swarup Damodar Goswami. And Swarup Damodar Goswami instructed this path in two ways. An outer way and an inner way. The outer way he taught to Vakeshwara Pandit. In the inner way, he taught to Raghunath Das Goswami. Now, as most of you know, Raghunath Das Goswami was an intimate of Swarup Damodar. He was called the Raghunath of Swarup. And although he was totally devoted to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, you should follow Swarup Damodar. So Vakeshwara Pandit, as far as we know, didn't write down the details of the outer path. But one of his disciples in Parampara, Dhanachandra Goswami, did. He wrote a book called Gaurgovinda Smaranapadati. And the Gaurgovinda Smaranapadati is a very detailed explanation of the outer path of Raghunuga Bhakti. Now, what's interesting about this, if you ever get a hold of this book, which I got from Krishna Kshetramaras quite some years ago, it's very detailed and, I would say, complicated, definitely time-consuming process of worship. You start off, you say a mantra for mantras for your gurus, and with that mantra you have a certain meditation and you have a certain worship, and then you say a mantra for each member of the Panchatattva with a certain meditation and a certain worship, and a mantra for Krishna and for Radha and for the Asasakis and the Astamantaris, and a mantra for yourself, and you're going through this very complicated process of mantras in addition to your Harinam Japa, in addition to your Gayatri mantras, in addition to your Bhagavatam study, in addition to everything that we in ISKCON call your sadhana. Your sadhana basically now has expanded with this Gaurgovinda Smaranapadati probably to be about 10 or 12 hours a day. And that's pretty much all that you're doing. And the only thing in that external path of Raghunuga sadhana is these list of mantras and meditations. That's all that's there. There's nothing else there. There's nothing about what's going on internally. There's nothing there about your qualification for entering the path. There's nothing about internal purification. There's meditation on guru, but there's no specificity about the role of guru. Now, it's called the external path because, well, it's stuff you're doing externally. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? Yes? And you can understand that this path could really only be followed by people who didn't have a job. They'd probably be renunciates. And they probably wouldn't be preachers. They wouldn't have much time for it. And so this outer path of Raghunuga sadhana, it's obvious, it's visible. And it became, I think, obviously, associated with what Raghunuga sadhana was. Well, that must be what Raghunuga sadhana is. It must be that you kind of give up everything else and you sit at Radhakund or someplace in Vrindavan and you say all these mantras and you do all this meditation. And then it became the Siddha Pranali. Well, to do this meditation, there's some, although Siddha Pranali is not in Gaurgovinda Smaranapadati, that, well, you must have a guru who gives you all of this. And all these misconceptions came up about Raga Yuga Sadhana when it became identified solely with this outer path. Now, the outer path is a bona fide path. It was taught by Vakeshwara Pandit. It was taught by Swami Dhammadhar. But by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's time, it had become perverted and misused. It's very amenable to being perverted and misused because it is external. If something's external, you can imitate it. Now, I mean, it's hard to spend 10 hours a day chanting mantras and meditating, or pretending to meditate, perhaps, but you can imitate it. And because there's nothing there about qualification, it was possible for gurus to give siddha pranali to unqualified persons. Because the meditation gives a kind of generic template, it was possible for the gurus to give siddha pranali in the same way to everyone. Okay, you're a 13-year-old Manjari wearing blue cloth, and so are you, 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 and so are you. But, you know, the spiritual world isn't like that. Yes, it's all individual. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, while not rejecting the outer path per se, he didn't teach it to his disciples. And because he didn't teach it to his disciples, and because he even warned them against the perversions of the outer path, there were many people who criticized him and said, well, he's not teaching Raga Marga at all. Because that was all they understood. Now, the inner path that Raghunath Das Goswami teaches here in Manashiksha also came from Swarup Dhamma. And in fact, the outer path can't function without this inner path, although the inner path could function without the outer path. You could do this inner path of Raghunath Das Goswami, and nobody would know that you were doing it. You could look just like somebody doing Vaidhi Bhakti. You're waking up early, you're going to Mangal Arati, you're chanting your 16 mats, you're chanting your 3 Gayatris, you're serving Rukmini Dwarkadish, and you're on this inner path of Raghunath. But nobody can see it. And so those who only understood the outer path looked at what Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was doing and said, oh, you're not doing Raghunath. You're a deviant. And we find, even today, there are those who leave ISKCON, and there are those who leave Bhakti Siddhanta's shelter. Oh, no, you're not really teaching Raga Nusa. And this was one of the reasons we felt it was really important to publish this book. To see how what Srila Prabhupada's given us, what Bhakti Siddhanta's given us, is completely in the line of Swarup Dhammadhar Goswami. Now, is it possible to enter into these inner states of ultimate spirituality outside of this line? Yes. But as we said again, it's not so easy. It's not so easy if you're going to find this in Catholicism or even in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. You have to kind of dig for it. Whereas here in Mahaprabhu's movement, it's right there. It's exactly what we're getting. So if one really wants to go to Vrindavan and develop spontaneous love, then why not? Follow Swarup Dhammadhar and follow Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And they will take one from Vaidhi Bhakti. In Vaidhi Bhakti, one is engaging in all of the aspects of bhakti, but it's like one's half asleep. One's following bhakti because they're convinced intellectually, they're convinced by logic. Is that reflecting off the screen in the light? No?
No?
It's still visible? Okay. But one's following it just out of intellectual conviction. And in the beginning of Raga Marga, one is starting to awaken to one's emotions of attachment to Krishna. And certainly, in Raga Sadhana, in Raga Yuga Sadhana, one is doing all the activities of Vaidhi Sadhana. Again, externally, there's not going to look like there's much difference. It's not that you're going to be able to look at the devotees in the kirtan and just kind of say, okay, that one's in Vaidhi Sadhana, that one's in Raga Yuga Sadhana. Because it's an inner path. And it gradually opens. Gradually opens. Now, in this verse, Raghunath Das Goswami uses the words sa-raga. One is starting to get some raga, some taste. What does this mean? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes in this commentary verses from Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada translates as one starts to become attached to a certain relationship with Krishna. So this is really the qualification. There's a lot of debate about this. Well, what's the qualification? You can't just say, well, I think I'm ready for spontaneous devotion now, I've been hanging around for a while. But it's something that naturally develops, just like Srila Prabhupada talks about how one naturally turns from a child to an adult. Just one day you have feelings you didn't have before. Right? And at first it's kind of subtle and you don't really know what it is and you don't know how to deal with it, isn't it? What is that? You may not even recognize it. I mean, I remember when I was like 13 and all of a sudden I started spending a long time on my hair. And in fact, if someone had come and said, well, you know, this is because you're starting to be attracted to boys, I'd go, no, it's not. I wouldn't even have understood what it was. Do you all remember that? So this is the beginning of awakening. And the beginning of awakening has a particular flavor. One gets attracted to Krishna in a particular way. So one way is as a servant. And here are the chief of Krishna's servants, Raktak and Patra. And there's so much in the mood of servants, when Krishna jokes with his friends, if they start laughing, they stop, because they know, I don't want to be so intimate with Krishna. I just want to serve him. So one may start to awaken that kind of feeling. Or one may awaken a feeling of friendship. I want to be Krishna's friend. I want to wrestle with him. Tell him I'm stronger than he is. Play games with him. And have a feeling of friendship with Krishna. One may awaken to having a parental mood with Krishna, as Krishna's mother or father. All of the, not everyone is eternally young, so they're not really older, but all of the older residents of Vrindavan, they have this parental mood towards Krishna. Just like, you know, we also may have a parental mood towards children that aren't our children. You know, a caring. Oh, I have to protect them. Here we see Rohini with Balaram, Yasoda with Krishna, Nanda with Krishna and Balaram. And there, then the black and white one from our book is there's Nanda, Yasoda, and Rohini with Krishna and Balaram. Or one may awaken to a conjugal mood as Krishna's beloved. Again, we see the chief devotees in that mood. And one may think, I want to be like that. Yes, I would like to be like that. So here's the painting that we had done for this verse. This is the awakening, the very beginning. So because it's the very beginning, we're seeing kind of from behind. Yes? And there's all the dust from the cows. It's just a beginning awakening, kind of hazy. And in this painting, we see there's Raktak and Patra. And next to Balaram is Sridham, and there's Subal and Uttala, Rohini and Nanda, Yasoda, you see Radharani hanging out by the tree in the shadow. So this is when the devotee first starts to feel, yes, a feeling, again, not something intellectual, but some feeling, some spiritual emotion. Yes, I would like to serve Krishna in this way. I would like to be like that. I would like to be. To serve Krishna as a friend. I'd like to serve Krishna as a parent. So this is the introductory part of Manashiksha. So now we're on the, as Raghunath Das Goswami will say, the shining path of bhakti. We have attachment, one-pointed attachment to Krishna in Vrindavan. We have some humility. We're attached to Krishna's places. To the devotees who mentally live in Vrindavan, to the devotees who even don't live in Vrindavan, to the spiritual teachers, to the mantras, to the holy name. We see our guru as our friend and Krishna's friend. We see Lord Chaitanya as Krishna. We're following the path of Swarup Damodar and Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. We're not attached to being bad or being good in the world. And we started to wake up. Now, if one can say, well, I haven't started to wake up. Can I read any more? Yes, because we're saying these next verses They have things that apply to everyone. Frankly, they have even things that apply for materialistic people. But those who have already started to wake up will gain the most benefit from continuing on in these instructions of Raghunath Dasgupta. Now we're going to the next section, and this is what I warned you about before. So, if you're scared, you can leave now. I notice some people already did. So this is where we're going to get into the deeper and deeper aspects of what does it mean to give up pride? What does it mean to peel away everything that's false? And how do we do that? By going for the real. So in each of these, it's going to be give up this false thing and get this real thing instead. Give up this false thing, get this real thing instead. And Raghunath Das Goswami is going to be going here from gross to subtle. We're going to be going very gross to more subtle, to more subtle, to more subtle, to more subtle, to more subtle. The first thing he talks about is what we talk about. Sound. What do we talk about? What do we hear? What's our conversations about? What other conversations do we listen to? What do we read? What captures our interest? Speech. Why speech? Okay, you ready? Asa varta desha visha mati sarva sarini katam divya grana shmuki vasarva tamilani api tvata lakshmi pati lakshmi tovyo manani raje rada krishna swarati mani dautam bhajama. Abandon the prostitute of mundane talk who plunders all intelligence. Do not listen at all to the stories of the tigress named Mukti, liberation, who devours all souls. Moreover, also give up attachment to the husband of Lakshmi, Shunyarayana, who only leads one to Vaikuntha. Instead, hear in Raja, serve Sri Sri Radha Krishna, who give one the jewel of their own love. So we're talking in this thing. What we talk about, what we listen to, indicates what's already dear to our heart. It's one of the main symptoms. Like Prabhupada said, a person appears intelligent until they open their mouth. Right? Foolish person, they look intelligent. We have a political candidate like that. Right? Probably many of them are like that. So they look very intelligent, they look very sophisticated, they've got a long list of accomplishments, and they open their mouth, and boy, what a fool. Isn't it? Right? I'm going to build a big, big wall, nobody can get over it. Well, if they had a ladder and rope, they could. So it just, one reveals oneself as soon as one speaks. What's really going on in our heart? We can claim, yes, I want spiritual life, yes, I'm interested in enlightenment, but what do we talk about? And I'm sorry to say that even in our Hare Krishna movement, many times we talk about everything and anybody but Krishna. It's entirely possible to go for a week in the Hare Krishna movement outside of a class when you don't hear a word about Krishna. Isn't that interesting? What do we talk about? Are we talking about just dharma and adharma, which we were already told to give up? Who's doing this bad thing? Oh, he did that bad thing. She did that. Do you know what this person did? Gossip. Then that's what's going on in our heart. That's who we are. That's what we care about. If you want to know what do you care about, what do you like to listen to? What do you like to read? What piques your curiosity? What do you talk about? And not only does it indicate what's already there, it forms who we are. Sound is what created the whole material world. Everything came from sound. From sound came space. From space came gases, from gases radiant energy, from radiant energy liquids, from liquids solid, and everything came from sound. You know all of this stuff is just sound, yes? It's all vibrating, it's all moving. As Prabhupada said, the whole world is full of Krishna singing. Everything's made of sound. So what we talk about, what we hear, it indicates what we already care about, and it creates who we are. On a very gross level, sound is creating it. Our bodies are vibrating, all the little atoms are vibrating. With what? The sounds that we make. The sounds we listen to. Everything is coming from sound. So Raghunath Das Goswami is warning us particularly about two kinds of talking. He warns us about ordinary gossip and mundane talk. He said it's like a prostitute. So a prostitute is somebody who appears, or they're supposed to appear, attractive. Right? Of course, if someone's been a prostitute for a while, they don't appear very attractive. You know, I know that. We lived in a building in New York City around the block from the old 55th Street Temple, and there was a laundromat in the basement. And at one point, after we lived there for months, I noticed that these not very dressed women often went up and down to the laundromat. I don't know, it took me a while to even notice that there was a pattern. And one time, when I went down to that floor and people were getting off at that floor, I saw a door I hadn't noticed before. It was open, and there was a bar in there. I was like, oh, there's a brothel in the basement of this building. And once I noticed that, then I started noticing these women, and they were very hard. Their language, their demeanor was very hard. It was quite noticeable. There was no softness about it. So a person in that profession for some time, they have to get a hard heart. Why? Because they're pretending to offer something that they're not really offering. They're pretending that they're going to offer you fun and love and all, but they're not. They don't care about you at all. Right? The prostitute doesn't care about the customer except to get their money. Well, you could say, well, that's true in every business. All they care about is your money. Yes, but most businesses aren't pretending to love you. Right? You just go to buy a computer. They're not saying that they promise you romance. They're pretty upfront. You know, we're just here to get your money. But the prostitute says, oh, I love you. And it's all a sham. So the mundane talk is like, looks attractive. Oh, I'll find out. But it's just stealing from you. It's just taking from you. Right? And of course, the prostitutes, not only do they steal their customers' money, they steal their customers' health, they steal their customers' reputation, isn't it? Right? I mean, how many people have fallen from their positions? But they're taking everything. Your family, what are they offering? They're cheating. So mundane talk is like that. You'll get pleasure. You'll get happiness. You'll get love. You'll get adventure. You'll get excitement. And what do you get? Birth, death, old age, and disease. Another material body. Is that very fun and exciting? Anybody find their material body very fun and exciting? Maybe if you're really young, you still have some hope. So it's cheating. It's cheating. Yeah? And the whole thing's cheating. It's all cheating. Even most of the prostitutes, they're not even getting most of that money, isn't it? They've got some pimp taking all the money and beating them. And all the customers are doing is facilitating this cycle of exploitation and abuse. And so when we're engaged in mundane talk, that's what we're doing. You know, when we're watching the TV shows and the movies, what are we fueling? The advertisers that are destroying the planet and destroying our health. Right? They're like the pimps stealing all the money. But we're thinking, oh, I'm having so much fun hearing about all these mundane things. Or it's fueling our envy. Oh, just see, that movie star actually has problems. That's all it's doing. It's just keeping us here. But it looks very attractive. From a distance, kind of, you know. Oh, that, yes, yes. And it'll be cheap. You know, if you actually have to keep a romantic partner long term, you have to invest something besides just money, isn't it? You have to care. So the prostitute's cheap, just pay some money, get some illusion of pleasure and leave. But what do they say? There's no free lunch. So it looks like it's cheap, but actually it's very expensive. It's much more expensive because you're not getting anything really in return. You're just getting the illusion of something, and so many things are getting stolen from us. You know, I like the story of Ulysses. When Ulysses was coming back from winning the war, so there were the sirens on an island. He was warned there are these witches, and they eat people. But they sing a beautiful song so that anyone going by the island thinks there's beautiful young women on this paradise island. And Ulysses says, well, I want to hear this song. So he had his men tie him to the mast. And his other men, he said, you put wax in your ears. So the men with wax in their ears, when they saw this island, they saw there was witches and a pile of bones. And so they're just rowing as fast as they can. And Ulysses was hearing the siren song. He says, go, go, go. And they couldn't even hear his instructions. So we should become like those men with the wax in our ears to the siren song of the mundane talks. Especially criticism, especially gossip. Especially those, especially criticism, which is full of envy. Raghunath Das Goswami here is talking about people who've already awakened some love for Krishna in a relationship. Even they can get their wealth stolen by this mundane. And then there's talks of liberation. It's interesting, this is about talks of liberation. Oh, I wish I could just get out of here. I wish everything would be over. When am I ever going to get out of this suffering, this material? When am I going to get liberated? When am I going to get liberated? He said, this is like a tigress who eats your very self. Why, as we said previously, with life after life, love and saying I want to just be liberated are the antithesis. If I say to Krishna, I just want to be liberated, no, love is I want to be with you, I want to serve you. So it takes the very self of the person. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's just like a prisoner who thinks the way I'm going to get out of jail is to kill myself. Yeah, you get out of jail, but then you become a ghost. Doesn't really help. Doesn't really solve the problem. Why not solve the problem? And either of these things, if one is attached to material enjoyment or one is attached to liberation, it will act like two witches. And then all that wonderful attachment for Krishna and all the attachment for the devotees and all the attachment for the holy places and to Guru and following Swami Damodar and all these wonderful things gets stolen away. And we see this over and over and over and over. Somebody comes, they have some attachment, they may even have some awakening, and they're not careful about this bhakti and mukti, and it's stolen. But then he says, Lakshmipati, don't become attached to Lakshmipati. Don't become attached to the husband of Lakshmi. Well, going to Vaikuntha is also bhakti. Why not be attached to Lakshmipati? Because we have this one-pointed tuvraja. And this attachment to Lakshmipati has some mood of Lakshmi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his commentary that one can want to go to Vaikuntha because one has this mood of wanting to enjoy the Lord's opulences. properly. Or one can even have a mood of dominantly wanting to serve the Lord, but still some desire to enjoy their opulences. I really want to help you out, but I also want to enjoy the good food you have in your house. You know, there's something that it's not all about you. I want to be with you not all about you, but also because I like your opulences. I like to be around you because you have money. I like to be around you because you're famous, and when I'm with you, I also look famous. There's still something there. And this is, in that mood, one is going to see the Lord as God. And in that mood of seeing the Lord as God, one will not be able to enter into this real sweetness that Krishna's just my friend. Right? The cowherd boys, they're just saying Krishna's just my friend. And therefore the gopis, when they see Lord Narayan, all they say is, oh, where's Krishna? Oh, obeisances to you, Narayana. Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? Because they want that sweetness. Only Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. Only he is the sum total of all rasa. Although Narayan is the same person. He's not showing all the rasa. He's in this mood of majesty. So how does one get free of this? If we're struggling with mundane talk, if we're struggling with, oh, I just want liberation. Or if we're thinking, yes, I want to go to the supreme heaven of the supreme opulence. Raghunath Das Goswami says we do this by getting the jewel of Radha Krishna's love. He said, Radha and Krishna, give us the jewel of their love. They give us their own love. Now this is Krishna's mood, this is Radharani's mood, that they want to share their love with others. In fact, the more the people they can share their love with, the happier they are. It's not something, you know, they want to keep to themselves. Now, there's still a lot deeper to go. And I've thought a lot about how this jewel, a jewel is something external and localized. So someone who gets this jewel of love for Krishna, there's still some way to go. They're not quite done. But they have this external, localized now, this love of Radha Krishna that they're holding on to. You have a jewel, it's something valuable. You gotta make sure you get both of them. A jewel is something valuable. You're not going to let it go. You're not going to have it taken away by a prostitute and a tigress. You're not going to let it go even for the supreme opulence. This particular painting is from a description in Govinda Lilamrita. How in midday, after bathing in Radhakund, Radha Krishna is sitting in a jeweled pavilion. And Radharani is decorating Krishna. So this is the jewel of their love. Nice expression there, huh? Especially by Krishna's expression. Okay, so I'm hoping we have another half an hour. I'm hoping we can do this next verse because this is a little complex. So now we're at the point of we're talking about Krishna.
Yeah.
Someone who's come to this point is talking about Krishna. They don't talk about ordinary mundane things. They're not talking about liberation. They're not attracted to Lakshmi's husband. Their speech is about Krishna. There's a problem. We talk about walking your talk, right? You heard that? Walk your talk. These people aren't yet walking their talk. They have all those attachments. Talking about Krishna. But what they do doesn't match what they say. Okay? Ready?
Asarchesta kasta pradavikata pasavi viriha. Bhagavi Varja Bhagane Kurutam Bukhara Mahavati Sayata Tamanahita.
While here on the revealed path of devotion, I have been attacked by the hideous gang of lusts, etc., who have bound my neck with the troublesome, dreadful ropes of wicked deeds. I am being killed! Cry out piteously like this to the devotees of Sri Krishna, the destroyer of Baka. O mind, they will save you from these enemies. So what do we do? This is the point now, again, Raghunath Goswami here, please don't misunderstand. He is talking here about advanced devotees who have already awakened some specific feeling for Krishna. He's not talking here about some person on the street. And he's saying, okay, now you're talking about Krishna. You're hearing and chanting. You're absorbed in your talk. Maybe you're a great preacher of Krishna. But you got captured. There are these thieves on the shining path. They've got a rope there. And who are they? They're lust, anger. Bhagavatam says anger falls from the sky. You ever felt like that? Just fell from the sky. All of a sudden, envy. Such a nasty thing, right? You'll see somebody who's happy. Why are they happy? They're too happy. Indrajumna Swami told that story one time when he was going through immigration. Someone came up to him and said, you look too happy. They'll probably stop you. He thought, okay. Greed. Illusion. I think on this body, I think that everything in the relationship to this body is so important. I have to spend my time worrying about money. I have to worry about health. I have to worry about relationships. And then just madness. And all of them have ropes, and their ropes are made out of wicked deeds. When we're influenced by lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, we do bad things. Yes? As soon as you're angry, you don't do nice things. We do, we're lusty, we don't do nice things. That's what the ropes are made out of, all the nasty things we do by lust. And we may be talking about Krishna, we're talking about spiritual life. And lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion have bound us around the neck with the ropes of wicked deeds. They're on the shining path of bhakti. See, they're on that path. They're on the shining path. But there's robbers on the path. And what did he say to do now? Call for the devotees of the killer of Baka. Well, what's Baka? Baka is a crane. Now, a crane looks like a great yogi meditating on one leg, like Ajahn meditating on one leg. They're meditating one leg, very peaceful, until there's a fish. And then back to the meditative pose. That's Baka. Baka personifies hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. Serve Krishna, worship Krishna, but secretly I'm doing all kinds of things under the control of lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. Only those who serve the killer of hypocrisy can save. Krishna destroys this hypocrisy. He gives us the strength. We don't have the strength on our own. Oh, didn't Raghunath Das Goswami say in verse 1, give up pride? You know, it takes some humility to say, I'm bound around the neck. I'm trying to be a spiritual person. I'm propagating spirituality. I'm talking about spirituality. I have some genuine attachment for Krishna. Genuine. It's real. But I got these guys with ropes around my neck dragging me around. It's embarrassing, isn't it? Isn't that embarrassing? You know, I'm like some kind of dog
dragged around by a leash.
The big dog. You never seen this big, fearsome dog. And then, yes, you know, I'm a devotee, but then, it's embarrassing. Take some humility to say, help! I'm being killed. I can't do this alone. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in his commentary here, to the saintly devotees of the Lord, headed by Narada, Bhishma, and Arjuna, I offer my respectful obeisances. May they protect us on the shining path of God. We need protectors like this. And they can come as soon as we cry out for the help of the devotees, as soon as we get a little humility. If we have the mood, yeah, I can deal with these guys, you know? I'm a devotee. I like Krishna, and I'm chanting, and I can deal with them. This lust, anger, greed, no problem. Doesn't work, does it? But as soon as we cry out for the help, they start running away. Now this is the devotees in general. Here we see the coward boys and the gopis who are friends with Bhakavi coming to release the devotees, but all of the devotees. We need the association of devotees. Therefore, we have an international society. We're not just on our own. So I have a friend who is really struggling with something for a long time. Struggling. And always saying, I'm going to deal with it. Leave me alone. When it was obvious to this person's friends that there was a problem. No, I'll deal with it. Leave me alone. I'm an adult. And finally they said, help. So this is why we have guru. Not just Diksha Guru, why we have guru, why we have friends among the devotees. To call for this help. It takes some humility to say, I'm struggling with this with anger, with lust, with greed, with envy. I'm struggling with it. Please help me. Now, not that you have to put out, on the internet, this is the way I struggled with envy today. But at least we should have someone we can go to for help. Someone we can be honest with. Someone who can be honest with us without offending us. Someone who can come and say, that was pretty greedy. And we go, oops. It really was. Someone that we can have some genuine humility with. And of course, the devotees of Bhakti also mean all the literatures left by the devotees. So the literatures left by the devotees, they also cut these ropes. As we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we read the books of the Acharyas, we say, what am I doing? I'm on this shining path of bhakti. There's Vrindavan right in front of me. I have some attachment for Krishna. Why am I letting this highwayman drag me around? And I've already got a jewel of love for Krishna. Remember, we got that from the previous verse? We meditated on this jewel of love for Krishna. This love between Radha. We're holding this jewel. Why am I letting this highwayman drag me around? And we read this and we say, yes. I'm going to get whatever help I need from the devotees. And I'm going to get help from the devotees' examples. I'm going to get help. I'm going to get inspired by them. Right? The devotees' examples, our heart acts like a crystal stone. And it reflects the devotees with whom we associate. We get inspired by their examples. We get inspired by their overcoming of difficulties. We get inspired by their instructions. We get a specific help by their friendship. And making it alone on this path, figure it's impossible. I mean, of course, you could be out in the middle of nowhere and have association with the devotees through the books and so forth. But whatever way we can get help from the devotees, we should do that. Because they can totally destroy these robbers. No matter how strong the ropes are, they can cut through. So we've been through the first verses of Manushiksha, been through the three introductory verses, and we've been through the first two of the middle verses dealing with our anartas. Tomorrow we're going to look at what we want. So far we looked at what we talk about and what we do. Tomorrow we're going to look at what we want, and deeper than that, what we crave. What is our craving that's driving everything else? Then that will finish getting through all of the obstacles, and then we will be finishing Manashiksha with the perfection, with the glowing nectar to drink, and the five nectars, and our ultimate achievement. So thank you all. This is a very long time to sit, and I can see not everybody is willing to sit for so long. So I was wondering if anybody has any questions or comments. Or... Yes?
I really loved your lecture. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I'm an alcoholic and I'm in AA.
Okay.
And it's amazing, your lecture is in AA. Because in AA we talk about action preceded understanding.
Mm.
So people come in, they don't want to do the steps, they don't want to use the tools, they don't want to get a sponsor, blah, 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 blah. And we keep saying, I mean, I've been there for a while, we keep saying, action preceded understanding. Do the work, which I equate to the exterior things that you talked about.
Yes.
And then over time, of many years in my case, the interior association with what we call higher power, or what we call it Krishna, it happens.
Yes.
But it doesn't happen to everybody. Even some people work very hard and they still don't have that connection with higher power. So I saw it very much in what you're talking about. And of course in the second part, with all of the external things that keep us, we have this other expression, which is, you can get a horse thief sober, but he'll still be a horse thief.
Mm.
And that is what I got from your idea that even though we're Krishna conscious and we're worshiping Krishna and we're attached to Krishna, we still have these demons that can take us out.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And one thing we'll look at tomorrow is if we don't ultimately get to the root of what we crave, the other things can start coming back, which is kind of scary. We'll get to that tomorrow, yes. And I see a lot of this is really dependent on, again, the first verse, Dambam Hitva. You've got to let go of your pride. Because if you go through the externals, but you keep your pride, you'll never get that understanding. You'll never get that understanding. Now, therefore, right in the first verse, Dambam Hitva. We can't learn anything with pride, can we? Right? We can't learn anything. You can't learn the definition of a word. You can't learn how to get to the grocery store. How do I get to the grocery store? Well, go down to this road, take a ride. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. Then how are you even going to learn that? Right? So this mood that I need help, I need to learn, I'm dependent on others. Without that, that's the thread woven through this whole treatise. Thank you for sharing. Anybody else?
What time is tomorrow the meeting?
5:30 to 7:30, same time. And I'm not sure, do we have any books left?
One more,
and I have one over here. So it's really funny. I've never done anything like this before. So when we published the books, I was thinking, well, I should, you know, print some and have some in each place. But I wasn't sure how many do I bring, you know. So I had 10 sent here, and we've already sold 8 of them. They will be available on Amazon, unfortunately for a higher price, but they will be available on Amazon hopefully in about a week. And we'll also have them available as ebooks, so they'll be available as a Kindle book and also as EPUBs. So EPUB and Kindle. Does anybody else have some questions? Yes?
Thank you so much for the video. This is a beautiful presentation. A quick question. Are these paintings yours? The ones that I
put in. You mean, did I paint them? Oh my goodness. No, the
our presentation, I thought that you would like.
Well, you probably weren't here right in the beginning, right?
Well,
Okay, so we have, there were 12 color paintings, oil paintings, done by Gianandrea Das from Italy. He's done some paintings for the BBT. He has a whole museum at Villa Vrindavan of Mahabharata paintings. And it took him 2 years to do these 12 paintings. And they were each commissioned for each verse of Mahesh Shiksha. And the smaller volume, where you have all of the color paintings, in the back of the smaller volume, we have the sections from the Shastra and the works of the Acharyas that inspired these paintings. So although each painting, like this painting, is going with verse 3, particularly for the words Swaragam of Raghunath Das Goswami in verse 3, but the description of this painting he also took from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Krishna goes to the forest. So for the paintings, we're all looking at different Shastras to look at the descriptions, because Srila Prabhupada always say, you know, don't just make up something. And then we have, in the larger volume, which has the commentary, we have 120 black and white drawings. So I have most of them in this presentation. A few of them I didn't put in. But the black and white drawings were done by about 7 different artists. And they're illustrating not only the verses, but also Bhaktivinoda Thakur's points in his commentary.
My question would be the description that you mentioned presented about the internal versus external path that Swami Damodara disclosed to the devotees. It was very interesting because personally my misconception was that before Lord Bhaktisiddhanta was fighting games and that Sahajism was like opposed to like the path of Buddha and religion, right? But what you put forward as external method seemed that it seemed like to be like a lot of rules and regulations are added to the Vaini, right?
Yes.
So Bhaktisiddhanta was opposed to that because faking that like extended Vaini, if I may call it, was easier.
That's correct. You can't fake Manashiksha, okay? You can't fake Manashiksha. This is internal, deep stuff. You can't. Maybe you can pretend to just talk about Krishna in public. But either you're having your wealth stolen by the prostitute of mundane talks, or you're not. Either you're being eaten by the tigress of the talks of liberation, or you're not. Either you're being dragged around by lust, anger, envy, greed, by the neck, or you're not. You know, you can pretend you're not being, but it's very different than just saying, okay, I'm sitting and chanting these mantras. I mean, I've met people who ostensibly are doing the outer path, and they have these, you know, maps of Vrindavan, and they're sitting and saying the mantras, and they're meditating on these different places, but is anything going on internally? It's very hard to say. And it's so easy to fake it. It's so easy to say, well, I'm going to be your Siddha Pranali guru and I'm just going to give you these mantras. And that's what happened. They started giving them out to unqualified people. You can't do this stuff if you're not qualified. It won't work. You just can't. This is what's going on in the heart. And this is a process also that can be taught to anyone in the modern world. And anyone can understand it. And anyone can do it. The other, also, the outer path, you really have to give up the world. You know, it's not, which is one reason why the critics say, well, preaching, that's a lower activity. Because if you're spending so much time preaching, you can't be just, you know, at Radhapun doing your bhajan. And I find that even people in Bhaktisiddhanta's line often don't understand how Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada are teaching the Rag Marga. They don't understand it. They think if we're not getting Siddha Pranali, I mean, I've heard it. You know, ISKCON devotees say that. Well, if you're not getting Siddha Pranali mantra, then you know you can't. You're not really a Radhmar. So we have a chapter in the book specifically about that, and we focus on one of the things we focus on, and the advice of Pranava Prabhu, who's a scholar of Bhaktisiddhanta, is the Gaudiya Math logo. So in the Gaudiya Math logo, which I didn't put that in the slide, but on the Gaudiya Math logo, Bhaktisiddhanta explains how there's Vaidhi on one side and Raga on the other. And Srila Prabhupada put this logo in a simplified form on the gates of our temple in Mayapur. But it's a very clear explanation, just symbolically speaking, of how Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was imbibing this inner path of Raghunatha Das Goswami. So anything else? We have time for a couple more. Yes?
It says to take shelter when you're being attacked by the ropes on the shining path of Bhakti, and you may wish to take shelter of devotees, of course, but then also you said Shastra. So I'm wondering, sometimes I don't feel like burdening devotees because I have a lot of mental problems, so it's repetitive. And so I don't want to, and it's embarrassing. So is it all right, or is it just as good, or is it not just as good to take shelter of Shastra?
Well, the Shastra are the words of the devotees and the activities of the devotees. I would suggest that we have at least somebody in this world, at least one person, who's a devotee of the killer of Baka. Somebody who himself has given up hypocrisy. That we can be honest with. And being honest with them, if we're really doing that, it shouldn't be so repetitive. It shouldn't be so repetitive. So I think the one, judge a tree by its fruits. So the real way you're knowing, am I taking shelter of the devotees of Bhakabit? Am I taking shelter of those who are devoted to the killer of hypocrisy? Is my own hypocrisy diminished? If my own hypocrisy is not diminishing, then either I've got the wrong people that I'm taking shelter of, or I'm not really taking shelter of. So can that be done simply through the books and the recordings of the great devotees? Yes. But I don't think we want to avoid having somebody in this world we can take shelter of. If you can't find anybody, okay, but ask. Raghunatha Das Goswami saying that verse, cry out. It's not just like, yeah, it would be nice if I had somebody. Maybe somebody will come along sometime that I can ask. Whenever Krishna wants, he'll send. It's desperate. Help! I mean, wouldn't you do that if you had, you got that far, you're attached to Krishna, you practically, you can sort of see, in this, it's kind of hazy with the dust. You're just sort of seeing them from behind. It's a hint, maybe. But you got the hint and you're seeing it and there's something there. And there it is. And the path is shining and I got this jewel. And choking death. Aren't you going to, help! I mean, wouldn't you do that? Even if you were just out on the street here walking and some guy came up, was chasing you with a rope. You wouldn't just be like, huh? Okay. Help! Somebody help! Where are the devotees? Anybody awake? It's a desperate cry. I need help. And I think also, and I'm sure this isn't your situation, but I think also with humility, it doesn't get repetitive because we really take the instructions we're hearing. We allow it to penetrate some of this armor of pride. We allow it to come into our castle. We call off our guard dogs. We call off our atom bombs and our hydrogen bombs, and we let it in. We're not afraid to apologize, and we're not afraid to face our and to say, here I am being a devotee, and I'm the dog of whatever anger or greed or just a dog on this rope. And we're not afraid to say to see that. And then it's not repetitive, because then this stuff really does get cleared away. It really, 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 really does. And when it gets cleared away, really, really does. Unless we're very foolish, it doesn't come back. And if you don't get out the ultimate root, it can grow again. You know what to say. But unless we're really foolish and we start watering the root again, it doesn't come back. It's real. It's authentic. So this is our main way, judge by the fruit. Am I really calling out for the help of the devotees of the killer of Baka? Do I want to get rid of my hypocrisy? Or do I want to just pretend to be a devotee when I really know that that's not what's going on? What do I want? You know, who am I going to fool anyway? So maybe I'll die and everyone will say, oh, yes, yes, they went back to God, but now that's not going to be where I am. They'll be there at the funeral. Yes, they went back to God. No, I didn't. I was just a pretender. You know, that'd be kind of sad. So that's what we want to judge. Is it cutting it? And, you know, sometimes the rope is going to be, the whole rope's going to be cut. Sometimes it's going to be partially cut, digging through the wicked deeds little by little. Sometimes you're going to get a cut from lust and you still have to deal with the greed. And sometimes you're going to get a cut from the greed and you still have to deal with the envy for a while. But at a certain point, if we really, in humility, ask the devotees who are free from hypocrisy because they're the servants of the Lord who has killed hypocrisy, they did. We have love and affection for all the devotees. We even have love and affection for the ordinary religious people teaching pious activities. But when we want to get help from lust, anger, and greed, we have to go to those who are free from problems. However we do it. And for one person, it may be this way. Another person, it may be that way. Maybe for one person, they just read something in Prabhupada's purport, and that's it. It's done. Another person, they, you know. But don't avoid... You're talking about AA. You have to have some person, right? You have to have a sponsor. Isn't that like someone you're accountable to? Right? There's an interesting, I haven't tried it, but there's an interesting website called Stick, where if you really have problems keeping a certain determination or vow, one of the things is you can sign someone up that you let them know whenever you mess up. You know, it's again, there's some accountability and there's some transparency. There's some. Thank you very much. Raghunath Das Goswami Ki Jai. Bhakti Vinod Thakur Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.